Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by CWB and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 13. Hui. Meeting. Summary. The colony comes together after their loss. Olive discusses potential leadership changes with Sherlock. John and Sherlock try, in their own way, to take care of each other. Notes. No, she still does not get eaten by a seal, you savages. The council calls for a hui as dusk and shadows settle over them. It has been the longest day of Sherlock's life. He is exhausted, but he trudges to the makeshift meeting area, John at his side. All around them are emperors making their way, some of them injured, all of them mourning. In front of them are six of the seven council pings, standing in a line, waiting for the colony to come to rest before them. The only sound is the rush of the wind whipping around the peaks of Cassiopeia, a siren's call to mark their collective tragedy. That, and the occasional trill of a Peng who is desperately missing someone. Seeger steps forward and stretches tall, puffing his chest and extending his wings in a stance of leadership, a bid for attention. Behind him, Mycroft stares at the ice.
Fellow emperors, I need not explain why we have called a hui this evening. The council wishes to recognize those we've lost and means to put forth a plan for moving forward, difficult as that may seem right now. First, though, I would like to thank all of you for your unwavering support and assistance as the events of the day unfolded. Vela and Pavo, you mobilized immediately to gather those who have lost loved ones, and have done an extraordinary job of setting up temporary creches and huddles. Thank you. Cetus, your healing expertise has saved many lives and mended many wounds. For this, we cannot thank you enough. We have come to understand as well that you had assistance from several young Pengs, Molling, Stamfjord, and John. We recognize you for your heroic efforts and invaluable assistance. Cetus, you may find yourself with some very promising apprentices after today. Erebus, as usual, your compassion, grace under pressure, and stalwart presence provided an unwavering anchor for so many of us. Here, Seeger pauses and takes a moment to regard those behind him. Pavo and Vela are openly weeping, and Mycroft continues to stare at the ice beneath him. Erebus stands, turned slightly away, his gaze fixed on the treacherous sea. Cetus's eyes are closed, and he sways back and forth, rocking ever so slightly. It is with great sorrow and the utmost respect that I name those lost. The council wishes to express our most heartfelt promise to each and every one of you who stand before us, lives irrevocably changed, that you will be cared for by your colony. Seeger closes his eyes and begins. The names come, one after the other, a cruel roll call of those never to return. He starts with Lyra, peacekeeper and council peng, and works his way through the colony. Sherlock hears names he recognizes, but most are unknown to him. Around him, walls of grief quiver and float, as individuals hear the names of friends, family, neighbors. It goes on forever. Sherlock counts. 37 of them gone. When Seeger finishes, he and the other five council pings bow their heads, and the collie imitates the gesture in a moment of silence and reflection. When Sherlock lifts his head, he looks toward John, who is looking away. Sherlock follows his gaze to what must be the group of orphans. John is staring at one of them, so Sherlock does too. He knows without being told that this is Marilla. He cannot concentrate on the rest of Seeger's speech. He hears bits in there about patrols, meal schedules, and nomination procedures for a new council ping, but mostly he watches John watch Marilla. Olive finds him the next day and asks for a word.
He is reluctant to leave John, so he does not let her lead him too far away. He makes sure John is still in his line of sight and watches him kick absent-mindedly at the ice. She starts by asking him how he's doing and if he would like to talk about the accident. He wonders why she doesn't call it what it really was, an attack, a massacre, a slaughter. He considers that maybe he isn't doing as well as he thought, because obviously she is using the least aggressive word for his sake, to protect him, to cosset him a bit.
I'm concerned about John.
Olive glances over her shoulder at John, and they both observe him staring off into the distance.
He witnessed a horrible scene, poor dear. Unfortunately, it will not be the last time this happens. It does not get easier, my love. How is his shoulder? Elder Cetus says that if he doesn't push himself, and if he lets it heal before going back into the water, he should see a complete recovery. If, however, he damages it before it heals, he may never regain his previous speed or abilities.
He does not tell her that none of this matters. He is never going to let John near water again. Olive raises her head in understanding and clucks her concern.
Then it is important that he follows Cetus's instructions. I've no doubt that you'll keep him in line, yes? No snowball fights, no sledding, no...
Mama, please, I'm not an idiot.
Far from it. In fact, I wanted to talk to you about something Elder Erebus shared with me.
Sherlock snaps his attention away from John and back to his mother. Erebus wouldn't have shared their private conversation, would he have?
He told me and your father about the research you were conducting on the way here. Sherlock, he is extremely impressed with you and your theories. And now, after yesterday's loss, the Council wishes to reconsider the way we forage and hunt. Erebus believes that your hypothesis, if proven sound, could bring tremendous benefit to the colony. Sherlock, love, the Council has struggled for years with what to do about the increasing seal populations and the shrinking pen colonies. They feel we are at a tipping point. If our numbers continue to decrease as rapidly as they have been, it is only a matter of time before they eat all of us.
Olive steps closer and tilts his chin up with the tip of her wing. Sherlock lets her, but cannot meet her eye. He's only just arrived, he thinks. He needs more time. He needs his lifetime and then some with John.
Do not despair, little one. Years ago, the colony had something of a junior council. It consisted of a select group of young Pangs, much like yourself, who had particular gifts of intellect and tremendous potential for leadership. They were included in almost all colony policy and attended council meetings. They were highly effective in their assigned tasks. There is some discussion about reforming the junior council, and of course your name came up. Nothing has been decided yet, but I want you to think about what I've told you and consider how such an honor might influence your future. This would be a significant responsibility for such a young one, but the alliances you form could be advantageous for the rest of your life.
Sherlock nods. She does not have to tell him that she is thinking about the prophecy.
Do you have any questions for me? When will they decide? After they elect poor Lyra's successor, that will be done before the moon begins its ascent. Do they have any candidates?
They have one, yes.
Can you tell me who?
Olive frowns and tilts her head, looking away. Sherlock knows that she is searching for diplomatic words.
It's all right if you can't tell me, Mama. You don't like this individual, though, do you?
He has given her a way out, knowing that he'll learn more soon enough.
I don't know them, Sherlock. This is all I can say. Go take care of John, my love.
She kisses his bill and gives him a tired smile, then turns and walks past him, back toward the adults. He only thinks of it when she's almost out of earshot, but pivots in time to call after her.
Mama, what happened to the other junior council? Why did it not continue?
She stops, but doesn't speak for a moment. When she answers, she sounds sad.
It was a time of great social unrest and change, Sherlock. Two of its five members went missing. The circumstances were unusual. and the families involved imagined themselves scandalized. The parents of the other three refused to let their pangs continue. Like I said, it was a long time ago. Sherlock lets her words sink in, then turns back. John, the Penguit, is trying to skip ice chips with his bad arm. Sherlock wonders if he could skip one at John's head without doing further damage.
Hold still! I am holding still. This is not holding still. This is flapping around like a grounded flounder. Oi!
Sherlock holds John's left wing flat against its side and continues grooming around the injury on his shoulder. He tugs as gently as he can on feathers that are stuck to the healing wound, then combs them with his bill, straightening and laying them back in place. When everything looks clean and settled, he scoops up a small chunk of ice and holds it where John's skin knits back together. John shivers and his wing trembles along Sherlock's belly.
Dang it, I'm almost done. I'm going to be okay, Sherlock. I know you are. Let's go already. I can make it. I want to show you. If you fall or twist your wing, or if you make sure that doesn't happen, yeah? Although I'm not sure you'll be able to protect me from a fierce giant squaw. Bird like that could just swoop right down out of the sky, grab me in its mighty talons. For the love of pangs, John, squaws have webbed feet. They scavenge on the ice.
Sherlock knows that John is trying to make light of everything, and he knows he's behaving like a constipated elephant seal, but he can't help it. He's not sure if he'll ever lose the residual shock and fear that seized him when he thought he might have lost John. Not ever. John sighs, a little puff of breath that swirls against Sherlock's ear.
You're nervous, I can tell. I'm unsettled. There's a difference.
John taps his foot in a series of short, fast movements. Sherlock doesn't respond, so he does it again.
Are you calling me a liar?
Maybe. John taps out another code word with both feet. The ice chip falls off his shoulder and lands with a clinking sound behind them. Sherlock tries not to laugh, which causes the right side of his face to twitch and smirk. He rolls his eyes, but can't hold back an exasperated giggle. John laughs out loud, and oh, Sherlock loves that sound so much. John's laugh consists of high, light noises and gasps of air from his precious lungs, rising above the roar of the wind and the lull of the ocean around them. He can imagine those notes drifting higher and higher, delighting the sky long after Sherlock can no longer hear them.
Oh, you go ahead and joke with your could-be-dangerous secret Peng language. See if I protect you when the giant squaw comes for you. Hey, you're the one who came up with that particular code, remember?
He leans forward and rubs his bill against John's, and John goes still, exhales, and rubs back.
I remember. Ready, John?
As I'll ever be.
Notes. Maori translations. Hui, meeting, conference. You will not regret watching this video of an emperor chick arriving into the world, his father showing him off to another dad, and that chick then chirping to an unhatched chick to help it hatch. There's a link that goes to YouTube, a video of baby emperor penguins emerge from their shells from nature on PBS. Peng and seal populations. Olive's concern that the seal population will soon overtake the pengs is completely my own creation and not an actual environmental issue. Under normal circumstances, a balance is maintained between penguin and leopard seal populations so that those populations remain steady. There is concern, however, that warmer temperatures are reducing the ice masses in the Antarctic, and scientists are concerned about the effect this will have on all Peng populations.